Hey guys, my name is Bernie.
My name is Yasmin, and you're listening to the Fashion Fopa podcast.
This is the podcast where we have candid conversations with industry professionals about the fashion industry. It's a mouthful, I know.
You can find us on Instagram at the Fashion Fopa podcast, and individually
at King Bernie with two E's at the end,
and at Yasisaya on Instagram.
If you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, be sure to leave us a review. And if you didn't know,
we're on YouTube as well now. So now that you do know, be sure to subscribe.
All of our information will be in the show notes, like always.
Once again, this is the Fashion Fopa podcast.
Let's get on with the episode. Hi, guys. Welcome back to the Fashion Fopa. Hi, guys. Welcome back to the Fashion Fopa podcast. My name is Bernie.
And my name is Yasmin.
You're listening to the podcast where we talk to fashion industry professionals about the fashion industry.
Yes.
I'm kind of tired. Bear with me.
Today it's been a long day for the both of us.
A long day. Capitalism has us on a chokehold.
It's gross.
Today we have a special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, guys. I'm Naomi Paris. I am a fashion writer and blogger based in New York.
Well, it's nice to have you on, Naomi. We're very excited to have you here. So let's just kick it off, shall we? Because we have some questions for you, girl. So I want to know, I mean, we both want to know, how did you get your start in the industry and what's your fashion love story? Talk to us about that.
It's still being written, but I've been in.
I like that.
Yeah,
it's still being written.
Nowhere near done. But I started. I would like to say I really got serious about fashion. Maybe in 2016 is when I really started discovering my style, and 2017 is when I got serious. I had just graduated high school and I was like, okay, I think I could do like something in the creative industry. I didn't know if it was going to be like fashion or photography. At that time, I had developed a hobby for it, like photographing my friends. So that's why I was telling Bernie earlier, I went to school for photography. And after 1 year, I was just like, nah, this is not for me. I don't like all the other stuff. I just liked taking pictures of my friends in their dope outfits. That was it. I didn't like all the other stuff that school entailed with it. Fast forward to 2018, I started my blog because I really wanted to create another platform outside of Instagram, that where my outfits like really mattered, and my, I guess my voice on those outfits, whatever I was creating really mattered. A lot of people at the time, I think I was on Instagram for already like 7 years at that time, and people were like, you should start a blog or a YouTube. So I went with what I had more patience for, and I started my blog, started writing about my outfits, just taking pictures, whether it be in Brooklyn or the city. A lot of, at that time, Soho was very popular, but as I started growing with my blog and my following started growing with that, I, you know, got more creative with my shoots. And then once the pandemic came, I wanted my blog to, you know, mean, just have more meaning with what I was creating, because I felt like it would be a little just like aimless and selfish to like be posting about how to wear a white button-down shirt, or, you know, the latest, my latest shopping finds. And we're in the middle of a pandemic, and we're in the middle of racial turmoil at its finest. So I wanted my content to start just getting better and elevating more in terms of like meaning, and especially being a Black creative in the industry, fashion industry at the time, especially in New York, was being tested a whole lot with, you know, the moves that we're going to make. There weren't, and there still are not a whole lot of like Black creatives in high places, especially like in the publication field. So my content, you know, elevated to like different photo shoots, you know, inspired by Black culture. I'm heavily inspired by 90s Black culture, 90s music, 90s R&B, all that. If you think of the whole Bad Boy era that came from York, if you think of Naomi Campbell, if you think of Iman, all those people, I'm heavily inspired. Andre Leon Talley, all those people, I'm heavily inspired. So I started, you know, doing photo shoots. My brother was like a, and he still is a very much a big part of like how I developed into the creative I am today, because he moved me to the next level. I remember my first photo shoot, I set up like, because my grandma has a balcony, so I set up like a gold background. She has fabric. She was a seamstress in the fashion industry, so like fashion was kind of like always in the family. And I set up the fabric, and then I wore like all white from like what this brand had sent me, and I just like did my hair up and just let my hair down and just started like kind of evoking the feelings of the culture in that time in fashion. And that's one of the things that like catapulted my blog into something other than being just like a trend guide, or, you know, it was a safe haven for me. And it was, and it still is a creative outlet, even though I'm like, you know, writing for publications now, it still is a creative outlet for me. It's something that I can call mine. Yes, I have like bylines at these publications, but it's something where like I'm like total control. And then fast forward, I would like to say around between 2020 and 2021 is when, you know, you saw, again, the efforts that people were making in the fashion industry, especially to, you know, include Black creators and amplify Black voices. And then Every Stylish Girl, it's like a very popular Black media platform created by, I don't know how to pronounce like her full name, but her name is Nana. She worked at, I think she still works at New York Mag. She was their social editor, and she created like this platform for Black and brown girls in the industry. You know, spaces for them to, you know, feel welcome to you know, other Black and brown creatives to share their stories. And she created like a business directory. So I created an account, didn't think anything of it. I just posted, you know, where I was going. At the time I was like working in retail. I worked at Cost before the pandemic, and then everyone, you know, of course got furloughed. But at the time I just created an account because I was like, why not? And then fast forward to the end of 2021. That's when, you know, I got my start with Pop Sugar, actually through them finding my profile on her business directory. So and then fast forward working with like a whole bunch of other publications. But yeah.
That's okay. I wanted to touch on something that you mentioned. So you were talking about context, guys. I've been following Naomi for a long time. I feel like I've maybe before the pandemic I've been following you. It's been a minute. Honestly, my time has been like blurred, but you mentioned wanting to create content that was not just like superficial, but having putting forward like some of the issues that were happening in the world, whether it's sustainability. I know you talk a lot about that on your page, or like Black issues and stuff like that. How do you make sure that that content is digestible for everyone? Because I think like sometimes that kind of content, people are kind of like, oh, I don't care about it. You know what I mean? So how do you make sure that something that your audience cares about when you go about creating that kind of content?
Yeah.
When I go about creating it, I like to, so I'm pretty like transparent with my audience. As much as I don't like do what the, I guess the normal influencers do, where they like talk on their stories often, I like to engage with my audience. Like whether it be DMs, you know, I talk to a lot of my followers all the time. But I just like to make sure that I'm staying true in my approach. Like, so whatever I come with, people are like, you know, you do it in such a way where it's like, you're staying true to yourself, but it's so different. And that's kind of how I go about it. Like, I just make sure it's true to me, but at the end of the day, making my point across without like stating the obvious, like people get it. I don't have to necessarily go on my story like, hey guys, I'm going to start like changing up my content. People just see it and like go about it and post it, and then people engage from there. And then, you know, if it coincides with a blog post, or if it doesn't, if I choose to share my story because so many people ask, then I'll just share that way, like a little story post, but nothing like major where I'm like, you know, just breaking it down for people. People mm-hmm. just get it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I really like what you were posting during Black History Month on your stories. I was like, yes. Like, it reminded me of so many people that, like, I've seen the work or that I've heard of, but, like, forgot about, you know? And it was, like, nice to see those people again because I was like, damn, like, that's true. Like, they did this and they did that. Like, those things that we see every day and that we're used to seeing and yeah. that we kind of forget, you know? And that, I think that's also, like, the thing about sometimes being a creative color, it's like people remember your work, but they don't remember the person who created the work. Mm-hmm. And sometimes yeah. that's like disappointing mm-hmm. because, you know, the work is the person. Like what we create as creative yeah. is like us yeah. ultimately.
I'm curious to know, because obviously you've said it and we've spoken about this already, but you are a writer. Mm-hmm. So what is it about writing in fashion specifically that excites you the most?
I guess the freedom, I would say, 100%. When I was writing in school, and granted it was a different major, but when I was writing, I still kind of like had limits, certain subjects I couldn't talk about. And granted with different publications, they do have their different guidelines that you have to follow, when writing for them. But I would say there is a certain amount of freedom that I feel in writing about fashion, especially, as of recently. I love how fashion like intersects with different topics, like fashion with beauty or fashion with culture, like especially yeah. fashion and culture and Black culture.
Yeah.
I love the stories that come out of that. So I was like, with my writing, I want to make sure that I'm making a lasting impact, like evoking change, especially not just in the world, but especially in the industry, because there still is so much to be done mm-hmm. with my words, so that, you know, it's not just I'm sitting around writing like trend guides all day. Those are cute, but, you know, like, I really want to get into the nitty gritty of like where fashion meets culture, you know, just all, yeah. these
all its intersections.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Love that.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I like that you bring that perspective to the table, because it's not everyone who's going to want to write about the intersections of everything, and especially within culture, within race, within Black culture to be specific. Like, we don't... I feel like for a while, that's not something that we would see very much of in blog posts or even in, like, just magazine articles to begin with. And it's nice to be able to have people shed light on it in the form of writing and do it in a creative way where, one, it's captivating to read, and two, it's educational, but not in a way where, like, you're just feeding somebody facts on facts on facts yeah. for
yeah
you know,
because sometimes, like, when you hear, like, some of the informational thing, it's like good information, but it's really hard to digest.
Yeah.
And yeah. it's like, especially if I think, like, for example, like when we have conversation around sustainability, a lot of times people throw numbers, and I think, like, a lot of times what happens is people cannot conceptualize what those numbers even mean. Because if you tell me that, like, you know, I don't know, just this is not a true statement, just but, like, if you tell me that, like, 70% of garment workers are women, it's like, no, but we need to specifically get into that. What does that mean? What does that look like? Who are these women? Where are they coming from? And why is that something that matters?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because then if you tell me that 70% of garment workers are women who come from X and Y, Z countries, then it's starting to put a little bit more context to that information.
Yeah. And I'm also more interested in knowing now, because, like, you're not being so broad about a statement.
Exactly.
This is us giving you your flowers, because you're doing a good thing out here. So keep doing what you're doing. So you work for Pop Sugar currently. What was the road to getting there? Like, that's the one thing that I'm most curious to know about, because, like, this is coming from somebody who's picked up the magazine since she was young, you know, like, I've read the spreads, read the articles in the past. So what was it like? How did you get to where you are now?
It was through the business directory that I got the job. Like, I remember I was, because, like, I'll just be, like, totally transparent here. I'm completely obsessed with, like, Chick-fil-A. And I was in the Chick-fil-A drive. I know. I was in, like, the drive-thru line. with someone, and I remember getting the email. It popped up on my phone. I was just like, oh my gosh, like Pop Sugar just emailed me with the opportunity. It was crazy. But that was just like a full circle moment, because I was just like, I've always wanted, I felt like at the time at the job I was, the previous job I was in, I was like, I want to get serious about my writing career. But getting my foot into the industry, like 2019, I got a retail job. I feel like every creative, or not every creative, but most creatives in New York, we start out in like retail and then we segue into other. If we don't like it, because most of us do not like it. It's like, if you don't love retail, if you don't love that stuff, I would recommend don't do it. But after that, the pandemic came. So of course I, you know, and I had the option to go back into my retail job. I opted not to, because, you know, my mind was in a different place, especially where I wanted to be in life. And I was like, you know, I need to achieve or chase my dreams now more than ever, especially with, like, you know, how serious things got in the world. So I was like, you know, I just want to take in every moment and do it with, you know, purpose, fulfilling my purpose as much as possible.
Amen.
And then I got a job assisting an influencer. So that was like a mixture of like remote work and in-person work, like wearing a whole bunch of different hats. Even though it was like assistant, I was like also social media manager, like, you know, optimizing her content, posting, coming up with captions, of course, taking her pictures, taking her content, you know, just a whole bunch of other stuff and administrative stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I was like a year into it. And then that's when, you know, I got the Pop Sugar opportunity. But really getting to Pop Sugar, I didn't realize, I underestimated how much my blog would be important in my career.
Yeah.
Because throughout my blog, I had gone through like a whole bunch of different things with just like feeling if like what I did mattered, like was blogging even popular anymore, or did it even matter?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even care if I continued to blog, and I didn't know how much like it would matter with my career, because in essence, like being, whether it be a fashion editor, fashion writer, fashion director for any publication, it's, in a sense, like it's all blogging. It's just like for a publication that's extremely successful, but it is blogging at the end of the day,
because
we're writing. So I would just like, I wouldn't be super consistent with my blog at different times, whether it be because, you know, life, or, you know, I was just like trying to rebrand and everything like that. But I feel like my consistency with my blog played a huge part, because I didn't know these publications or people were watching me. I didn't know how many people were paying attention to what I did. So yeah. I feel like when I really started elevating my content, especially after during the pandemic, like summer 2020, and when I started like doing more cultural photo shoots and, you know, cultural pieces, that's when people started to pay attention even more. And then, you know, they emailed me and they said they saw my blog and everything and how I approach different topics that I would write about. And they said they loved it and wanted to hire me and think I would be, you know, a good asset to the publication. So that's basically how I got there. And of course, like I did internships with like this program called College Fashionista. It's like a program for like creatives who really want to write in the industry. So I was like, I went through a couple of seasons where I was like their feature writer, and, you know, it was just like stories here and there, but it did play a part in like the experience. Getting writing experience.
I didn't even know that was a thing. I mean, the more that I hear about stuff like programs or like, like mentorship situations or whatever, and it's always in the States, and I'm like, yeah, Canada could never.
Oh,
like,
my God. let's not even start.
Because I'm just going to get mad.
That'd be
a whole other conversation.
I heard a lot about College Fashionista. Also, I think you can do like photo shoots with them. Like, it's a whole thing. Like, it's really for people who want to be in the fashion industry. And then I think they have something else that's like for graduates. That's like Influencer Collective or something like that. I think so.
Yeah, I think I heard that. Yeah.
But yeah, of course, it's only in the US.
Yeah, yeah. It's not.
So,
I don't want to all here.
Question for you. What other publications have you written for or do you write for? And what kind of content do you write for them? Like, kind of give, for people who have no idea what it means to be a fashion writer, can you kind of give them a breakdown of what that looks like?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll answer the first question and then I'll go into the second. But first, I write for Pop Sugar and Bustle because Pop Sugar, I was actually under contract with them until the end of December. And then the media industry kind of went through this very weird space where a whole bunch of layoffs were going on. And my company was one of them that were affected because from when I started in Pop Sugar last year to December, we were under two different parent companies. So we were affected. So then I ended my contract, but I opted to, you know, start contributing for them. So I am doing freelance work for them. And then I do freelance work for Bustle. With Pop Sugar, I was doing mainly like fashion articles, just like anything I basically wanted to do, and a multitude of like assignments that my director gave me. And then assignments that I pitched, whether it be like street style roundups, celebrity news, like my favorite person to write about was Rihanna, still is Rihanna, because I just love her style so much. And of course I had to like kind of stay in line with like what Pop Sugar, what they center their content around. But yeah, and then I also did like fashion week coverage, designer interviews for, especially for independent designers, designers of color, you know, people just who are not super popular in the industry as yet, but giving them that platform to share their story and so that people can, you know, shop and pay attention to their brand. And then also for Bustle, I do mainly branded work. So like any big retailer, whether it be like Macy's or any of these other retailers, you know, Nordstrom, whatever, I just do mainly branded roundups and, you know, stories that they assign me. It's more so like centered around branded content, you know, shoppable articles at the time. Yeah.
For the second part of my question, what does a fashion writer do on the day-to-day? Kind of give like, explain it. Because I feel like, okay, this is a thing. Sometimes I'll explain, you know, this is what stylists do. This is what a design does. But then people who are not in the industry still don't get it.
Yeah, they won't.
So explain it. Like I'm literally 5 years old.
Yeah, like the version for dummies, day in the life. Walk us through it.
Okay, so I'll try my best. So I would say fashion writers, especially for, I guess, the time we're in, a lot of us work remote, especially those who do freelance work. So we're not in the office. We normally start the morning checking our emails. We get like PR galore from a whole bunch of publicists pitching brands, pitching different stories, pitching different like celebrity outfit sightings, whether it be New York or LA or whatever award show just happened that weekend, especially Mondays are crazy when it comes to getting PR emails. But just sifting through those emails, communicating with editors on different assignments. But our job mainly is to, I guess we would get whatever assignment from our editors, or we would pitch something. Say I want to pitch like a roundup of Black women-owned brands to support this Women's History Month, and say the publication is okay with doing like anywhere from 50 to 70, then I would start doing, I guess you could call this like market research, because it's like shopping online and stuff and finding about the brands. I would go to whether it be Instagram or go to like any of these like major retailers who have like expanded their, I guess, their selection to, you know, women-owned brands, or Black-owned brands, whatever the case may be, Farfetch, Net-a-Porter, Essence, or like Instagram, any of these like pages, whether it be like Fashion Bomb Daily or whatever it may be, these fashion pages, and I would go and sift through, write down, do my research, and then, you know, go to my editor and pitch it, saying, you know, basically like 1 to 2 sentences, I want to do this story and how I think it could, you know, affect the publication in a good way, bring revenue in, and then you know, she give me the check, whether it be to, you know, go ahead and do the story, or if she wants me to research more, do more in-depth research based on whatever feedback. And then she'll give me, you know, the green light to go ahead and start constructing the story. A lot of these publications, sometimes they have like a 250 word limit or sometimes 400 word limit, whatever the case may be. Then I start building out the story, doing the, we call like the main text of the story, the intro. And then I would, you know, gather my different products from the site, whatever directive she gave me, if it's to do purses or if it's to do whatever trend may be resurfacing, or if it's to do shoes, whatever the case may be, then I would do that and, mm-hmm. you know, add all the products into whatever content management system the publication uses, submit the draft to her. And then she would give me feedback. And then if I need to make any amendments, and then like, maybe 1 to 2, 3 days later, then the story goes live because, well, they do it on their end, the editor, whoever they are. But yeah, that's basically like how the workflow would go. It's very like flip-floppy at sometimes, and it's very spur of the moment. So I could be working on an article at like midnight, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I just want to say, I feel like because I used to write for publications, but it was not necessarily fashion-based. It was more so like culture, like what's happening, or like romanticize your life, like it was like those kind of articles. But I feel like you talking about this, it's making me like, I've been thinking about going back to writing again, because it's been like something I really liked, mm-hmm. but like you talking about it, it's making me even more like, oh my god, like definitely need to go back to writing. Like before, it was like, maybe I think I said that to Yasmin,
you did
a few times, like maybe I should go back, but now I'm like, yeah, definitely.
You've been saying a couple things that you're like, maybe I should go back into this, or maybe I should get into that, and I'm just like, just do it, Nike.
I know, but I think like it's like one of those things that I feel like when you're creative, I don't know, especially when you're like what's the word, you're like a multidisciplinary creative, it's like sometimes one thing becomes your focus. And I feel like for styling, that's been my focus for like 3 years at this point. You know, and and now that it's been my focus for that long, I feel like I can't do anything else. And I know that it's not true, but I feel like it's like my brand, and like if I venture into something else, then it's like off brand. And so I think it's more so my brain trying to be more careful with the way that I go about it, as opposed to just jumping into it, because I'm a very logical brain. Like I'm very creative, but my brain is extremely logical. So I think I'm like calculating how I want.
She's like solution based as a person. So
yeah,
got it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's your intrusive thoughts, babes. Just
I don't know if like you, for example, feel like that, because if you went from like writing for your personal blog to like now writing for a publication, like does your brain have to do a switch up from writing for your personal brand to like writing for you know what I mean? Like I feel like there's a difference, because I used to have a blog, and I feel like when I started writing for different for other publication, it was really hard for me to switch off my personal brand brain and put on the whatever brand I was writing for. Like it's I don't know if you experienced that.
It was definitely something to get used to at first. I had a lot of days where, like a lot of rough days in the beginning, because I'm an overthinker, so I'm like,
ooh, child, me like, too.
Even before I would like submit it to my editor, I would just like be going through the article like 10,000 times and trying to find something wrong with it, thinking like, maybe I need to add this here, or maybe I need to use the word, you know. But you know, definitely learn not to overthink. I overthink a lot, but it wasn't like super hard for me to like, I guess, get my mind accustomed to the fact that it's another publication. But I guess just thinking like my work was good enough, because I still couldn't believe that I earned this opportunity with like the experience that I had at that time.
So. Imposter syndrome.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
It keeps being a subject that comes back up in our episodes now, and it's like, huh.
It comes back up a lot. And I feel like every time I say it, and it's almost a reminder to myself, they wouldn't have reached out to you if they didn't think that you were
no
qualified and even overqualified for the job.
Yep. If you were not up for it, the opportunity would have never come. So it's just a question. It's just a question of literally not questioning it. Like, don't think about it.
Yeah. And also, want to point out that statistically, women of color specifically experience a lot more,
more
imposter syndrome. So sometimes is it that we're not good enough for the job, or is it that we feel like we're not good enough for the job, or is it just racism and patriarchy at play that's making us feel like that, you know, because there are people who may not be as good or may not be as hardworking, who do not look like us, who get the same opportunities or even better opportunities than us. So it generally might just be the effect of the systems that we have to be, that we're put up against.
Yeah,
it's the Beckys of the world. That's what it is.
Definitely. I think, if I may add, I think it's definitely a great part of the last one, because we had and are still kind of fighting so long to just be in these spaces that it like trips us up every time we're in these rooms, because it's just like, is this really our life? Because for so long, you know, just losing different positions to, you know, people who are not people of color. So it's just like, am I really qualified for this? Or is this like real life right now? So just kind of getting past that trauma of, you know, racism. Yeah.
And then sometimes people making you feel like you don't belong in that position. Yeah. That like you stole something from them because you're here. But it's like, no, like I worked hard for this. You know what I mean? Yeah. So
I got my spot here just as much as you did. Exactly. Same as you did.
And it's not just something that people experience in the creative industry. It's something that like people experience in all industries. Like the amount of time my mom, because my mom works in like the health industry. Mm-hmm. And like within a year, she went from like assisting her boss to now becoming the boss to now going up another level. She just kept getting promotions. Mm-hmm. And the way that people felt like you do not deserve this job, but it's like she has multiple degrees, she has like she can do the job, you know what I mean? So it's not something that just happens within the creative industry. It's something that happens in different industries where people feel like entitled almost to having those some of the opportunities that you may get. Yeah, which is the thing.
It's barbaric, honestly, but I had to say it. I had to use the big words. I'm sorry. It's just
I'm so sorry. I've not heard this word in so long.
It's just funny, whatever.
I think about this and I'm just like the only thing that comes to mind is just why? Like, why are you pressed? What are you pressed for? Please.
Yeah.
Like, I worked hard to get here. All I'm asking is to breathe. You can't even offer me that.
You mentioned earlier that you felt when you were blogging at some point that you felt like, you know, do people even read blogs? Like, you know, because at some point blogs were really popular. Back in the days, I remember
they
that
were. Time.
I was obsessed. You guys, I was obsessed with blogging. Literally to the point where I created my own blog. Anyways, I rebranded that blog like 3 times. I was 14 being like, oh my God, I'm going to be a writer. Like,
why am I not surprised that you're saying this right now? You rebranded your blog how many times? Repeat that again.
Multiple times. So a lot of people think that blogging is like a dead craft. Mm. Because of the way that social media is, especially with like when Instagram got introduced to the world. How do you feel about that? Do you feel like we might see the comeback of blogging? Do you feel like it's still dead? Do people still read blogs? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't feel like it's totally dead, but I think of people, like the concept of people starting out with that, I don't think it'll like ever be as popular as it was unless like some like random resurgence were to like surface on social media, and then like everyone would go back to blogging. Kind of like how just randomly so many people started to do like all these reviews on TikTok of like whether it be the Met Gala or like any of these popular awards shows, like red carpet moments, like that just became a thing, and then you just see a whole bunch of like fashion critics on TikTok now.
Yeah,
I don't think it'll like really become like super popular unless like something like that were to happen where it would be like a trend to do that. And mainly because I think like blogging has kind of been very much overshadowed by influencer. Like I think when people think influencer or they hear influencer and then they hear blogger, they think it's the same thing. It's partially because a lot of bloggers are influencers, or a lot of influencers have, you know, turned into the brand that they are because of their blog or whatever. Yeah. They don't like keep up with it as much because like social media is where the money is at, basically. So yeah. No brand is paying you to just like write about them. Mm-mm. That's it.
So I have a theory, guys. Because I actually been thinking about that for a bit. I feel like people are starting, like collectively starting to get scrolling fatigue, especially for Instagram. I feel like no one really enjoys Instagram 100%. Anymore. And I think partly it is because of the app, but I think like even TikTok, I definitely see people starting to not enjoy TikTok as much. Like I know it's still on its height, but I think as fast as it went up, it's probably going to hit a dip.
It'll have its time for sure.
Yeah. But basically, my thoughts are that a lot of people are going to start wanting to consume long-form content.
Waiting for you to get to this. I had a feeling you were going to get to this eventually.
Yeah, I generally feel like a lot of people are going to start to go, because like podcasting is so popular now. I've been listening to podcasts for years, but now it's becoming even more popular. And I think a lot of people are talking about like, there was a trend of like people talking about like YouTubers that they used to watch. Like I think a lot of people are in need and in desire to consume long form content as opposed to the quick, fast content. And I think like maybe part of that could also be blogging. Because we used to like sit down and read blogs and stuff, and there's been a few people that write like essay articles like that they publish online. I've read like a few like university essays, and I think those are really cool to read about, especially if it's like topic that I'm interested on. And I've heard like people on TikTok talk about certain essays that they've written, you know, and sometimes I go read them because what they're speaking about sounds super interesting. So I feel like maybe YouTube along with like podcasting, like long form content, and even blogging will probably have a little comeback. Like I don't think that the way that like TikTok and social media is set up, like specifically TikTok is set up, I don't think it's sustainable in the long run. I think a lot of people are looking to get like long lasting content, because to this day there's a few videos on YouTube that like I could go watch and I know I'm still gonna laugh about it, and that was something 100%. I used to watch years ago.
Go back to it again and again, and like I am part of those people as well who misses like old YouTube, who misses like long vlogs or like just like sit down. When is the last time that I have seen or consumed someone like this is the style bloggers specifically, like someone like fully sitting down and doing like a review or like a lookbook or a styling video? I have not seen creators put out that content in so long.
Yeah.
So long. It's crazy. Like now I'll see the styling videos on TikTok, but like
20 seconds.
Again, 20 seconds or so. And even the styling videos on TikTok, I'm sorry, this is not shade the girls, but a lot of these styling videos that I see on TikTok are just...
they be styling, but they ain't styling. Let's just say that.
They be styling, but they're not stylish, is what I'm trying to say. Like, a lot of these girls, and I will probably have to rip my ears out if I have to watch somebody else's haul where they're describing how a fabric feels or what the color is or what the hem of the shirt is in a way that just sounds so like, are you five? Like, what do you mean? What do you mean the frills at the bottom? It's called the lettuce hem. What do you mean?
That shows how much they don't know. Or if I hear like Barbie core or anything core one more
anything
time.
Core. I'm like, huh?
I actually hate when I get it in a science. Please, can I please not cover this? Because
I just, yeah. Like I used to watch, like there are specific fashion bloggers that I used to watch, like, very, very early on, that, like, it was their thing. Like, fashion content was their thing, and they knew exactly what they were talking about because they either worked in the industry or they started in that, like, for a long time. They had educated themselves. So, like, I would consume their videos down to a T, and I would listen and take notes. You feel me?
I'm glad that you brought this up, because I literally had this conversation with one of my coworkers. So, my day job, I work in social media in a bridal company. And we were talking about how I felt as though a lot of, like, content creator influencers in the fashion industry are not necessarily, there's a different standards for them in comparison to other industries. For example, if you're a makeup content creator and you do not know, like, the name of certain products, what certain ingredient means, or you're a skincare content creator, you don't know what hyaluronic acid is or what it means or what it does to someone's skin, the different skin types and things like that, people are not going to follow you because you're not an expert in your field.
They're going to think you're like,
exactly, they're going to be like, what is she even talking about? Whereas in the fashion industry, people don't need to know the terms, and they don't need to, like, understand what you need to create a proper style, like a proper,
how to build an outfit, like, they
How to build an outfit. Like, some people don't even know what, like, a capsule wardrobe. I've heard people talk about capsule wardrobes.
Oh my gosh. No, my biggest thing was, and I remember this was specific, shout out to Asia Jackson, she is a blogger that I love, I adore her content, I love everything she puts out, she also has a podcast, but I remember her, she was calling out the fashion girl in this video, but she put out a video in particular, I don't remember if it was about capsule wardrobe or not, or just building a wardrobe in general, but she made a very clear point that I noted from this day, and it's so true. People do not know that there is a difference between an essential and a basic, and everybody and their mother who will talk about building a capsule wardrobe will use the same two words to describe one thing, and it's not the same. There is a huge difference between essential pieces and basic pieces.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I've been dying to talk. Bro, people calling everything vintage.
Oh, sorry, that was probably louder than the mic. Yeah. Girl,
that
everything, like, is vintage?
What do you mean everything is okay? So it looks like something that was sort of redone from something that you would have seen in a Y2K movie, therefore it's vintage. You were born when it came out. That's not vintage, babes. But it's
also,
not.
Also, when the whole Y2K thing came out, a lot of it was not even giving Y2K. It was giving, like, modern take of what Y2K is, which is not the same thing.
But that's always what it is when trends circle back around. That's the thing. People need to understand that every trend that comes back around literally has a 20-year cycle. So everything that we're, like, hyped up about now is stuff that was popping literally in, what, we're 2023? So in 2003. Anything that was popping in 2003 is what's coming back, circling back now in a more modern take. Same as when the 90s were, like, in its prime. Yeah. Anything that was popular in the 90s was also recycled from what was popular 20 years before, which is the 70s. And it's recycled, and it's recycled, and it's recycled. It keeps going in a cycle over and over again, therefore making nothing ever really new or innovative in fashion a lot of the time, at least on the mainstream end of things. For sure, there are designers, and we know of designers that were even close to Bernie and myself that will make innovative pieces of stuff that you have never seen before. Right. But if we're talking on a global scale, nothing's ever really fresh, nothing's ever really new. So to call something vintage when you can pick it up at Forever 21, don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah, I think, but that's literally exactly why I think, like, long form content from people who know what they're talking about, like, fashion writers are so important, because, like, even myself, like, when I had an interest in fashion, like, I read from bloggers and fashion writers who either went to school for fashion, because not everyone can go to school for fashion, that's also the thing, but I read from these people, and that's how I learned the proper language and the proper lingo to describe certain things that I probably wouldn't have known if I didn't read those people. So I feel
I agree.
A lot of times, like, right now, we're putting so much focus on, like, fashion influencers and content creators, and they do have their place in the industry for sure. But I think, like, we can't discard, you know, the people, like, those jobs that we've always had, like the stylists, the writers, you know, all those people are important within the industry.
I'm going to say something. You know what it is?
This has become a whole bread.
I think that the content creators who put out the hauls and the little styling videos and, like, you know, their reviews, whatever, who are not educated in the industry, I think that these girls are doing their thing and they have their place, but they have their place for a specific market, and that's for the girls who don't know and don't really care to know about anything technical within the industry or anything technical regarding fashion and regarding style. Mm-hmm. I think that they are catered to the girls who
are following literally, trends.
Yeah, who are followers, who want to follow trends and who want to look like the girls who are making these videos.
Yeah.
That's what it is, because I can count on my two hands plus of how many times that I see people wearing the same thing as said blogger times whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it just, I see it a lot. And they're like the perfect example of a blogger who, again, like, has, and I honestly, I give her credits. I give her such credit for the amount of growth that she has had in the industry as an influencer and in the industry in fashion. And I did not expect her to have a rise in fashion whatsoever, but she's become someone who's just in there, you know, very much in there. Emma Chamberlain, crazy. I did not see that coming.
But also, she has a stylist. Like, the reason the reason why she is now this, like, quote-unquote fashion icon, I think fashion icon is a big word, la.
Because she made money and she got a stylist and she was able to hire someone.
Yeah, I generally can't think of another word for fashion icon, but, like, you know, she has a stylist. She has a team behind her who are putting her into those, who are creating that personal style for her, right?
Yeah. Like, they created her brand. And exactly. That's why she is in the rooms that she's in now.
Creating the brand is hard. I think they perfected their brand. Because I think that's what stylists do. They kind of perfect someone's brand. But like I said earlier, like, that's why we need people like Noemi. We need the stylists.
We need people like myself and Bernie. Like, if it weren't for her team, her stylists, her PR people, all that, I guarantee you would not see Lil Miss Chamberlain as a guest judge on season 2 of Next in Fashion. You would not see her doing red carpet interviews. Yes, I'm watching the second season right now. She was a guest judge on one of the most recent episodes. Guest judge, meanwhile, the most common guest judge for that whole show is Jason Bolden, rightfully so. Duh. But yeah, it was crazy when I saw that. I was like, wow, fashion icon Emma Chamberlain. Okay. Sure, you know?
Interesting.
But again, like, you would not see her in rooms like that, and you would definitely not have seen her at the last Met doing red carpet interviews with all these celebrities. You would not. She would not be buddy-buddy and bestie-bestie with these models as well, either, if it weren't for, like, come on now.
See, okay, earlier, Noemi, you touched on fashion being, like, in conjunction with other things, like, within the industry, like fashion culture and, like, the fashion and music, for example. I'd love to hear, like, your thoughts about people who are not necessarily in the fashion industry, but they're using fashion to elevate their brand or their career. Like, is that something that you've personally done? Like, I mean, obviously you work in the fashion industry, but how have you used fashion to elevate your brand and your career to where you are now? Like, I think a good example of, like, that phenomenon. English. You can tell English is not my first language sometimes. Like, a good example of that is Zendaya. Like, she's talked about it before, saying that, like, she used fashion to be able to get the attention of people, where even if she didn't have her big role, like, she was a fashion icon before she had her role in Euphoria, which is insane.
Way before.
Even if you think about someone like Cardi B, for example, she released her album, her first album, and she has not made another album since, and it's been years now. She's only been doing features, but yet she's still relevant, and the reason why she's still relevant is because of fashion.
I'm
definitely here for that. With me, I would say, like, because fashion's so much, like, a part of who I am, it's not just, I don't see it as a way to like elevate whatever I'm doing. I just see it as like something that comes natural to me, as a way to really just express myself, just like really taking it back to like what it's originally meant for. I think fashion is meant for just a way of expressing yourself and a way to connect with other people. I would
100%
even think about like when, and I always say this to my friends because like people who like are from out of New York, they wouldn't know that like the Soho today is not what Soho used to be back in like 2017 or 2015. Like, yes, it's still very much the shopping district, but it's not like the same, like the, I guess the vibe, the atmosphere of it, it's like, I guess, gotten filled with like super trendy stores, and it's not, it's not the same anymore. Like, it's not even the same when it comes around Fashion Week time. Like, it's just not the same. And I feel like when I used to like walk down the street, like after school, me and my friends, we would go to, in high school, after school, me and my friends, we'd go to Soho. And that's when like, cause I went to like a uniform high school, but I never used to like, you know, abide by the uniform. I always get detention for it. Cause I'm just like, I want to express myself. And like this uniform, like I don't want to be wearing navy blue and white all the time. So I would like go after school, you know, take off whatever like little piece of uniform that I had, put in my book bag, and like I'd be walking down the street with my friends after school, just in Soho, just to be in Soho, and we'd see so many like dope people, dope creatives, dope authorities in the fashion industry, from like what you were describing, Brainy, like stylist or, you know, wardrobe assistants, whatever, just going about their daily thing, but they're dressed to the T, and like say they would like what I have on, and then we would just like be in passing on the street and compliment each other. It's just that way of like connecting, or sometimes form a whole, you know, conversation. I connect with them, we exchange like Instagrams, and it's just like a whole big thing. Or when, even when I used to be in photography, go to school for it, I had this series where I would just like go to places that I knew in New York, or rather Manhattan, places that I knew, where it would just like I would see a whole bunch of well-dressed people. I would go up to them and ask them if I could take a couple pictures of them, kind of like just really embracing the fashion culture of New York. It was a very daunting thing because, you know, not everyone's approachable on the street in New York, but that's what I would do. And even then, it was just like a way for me to, you know, at the time, what I thought was my career, a way for me to, you know, just like go after my dreams like relentlessly. And fashion was the connecting factor, because what they were wearing, I wanted to take their picture. And a lot of times, most of the time, yeah, people were down for it, and it helped me with whatever, my assignments, whatever in school, anything like that, or just like really just like connecting with people, making new connections. That's like just a, that's a very like important thing in the industry, but I really just like to bring it back to like what it's originally meant for, it to connect with people from all different walks of life. That's what it's about for me.
I agree. It's a language in itself, and like it really does, like you said, connect a lot of people. And I feel like it's very underestimated, especially obviously, I mean, mostly for people who just aren't in the industry or who don't really understand or want to take the time to understand. But yeah, no, I'm fully like, I've digested everything you've said, and it's all stuff that like we talk about on the side, that we have conversations with people on. It's just nice to hear a different perspective with it too. But to kind of piggyback off of what you were saying, you mentioned photography being something that you used to do or a passion of yours before. So obviously we've talked about you and your writing for the last like nearly hour at this point, but other than writing, what are some other passions that you have in the industry as well?
I would say photography, and kind of, I don't know, people tell me all the time I should be a model, and I'm like, no, I don't really want that life, but
don't say no until you try.
I would be down to ask, I don't care what, like, if it's a magazine that I like, you know, I guess resonate with their vision or, you know, their purpose, or I read them a lot, whether be Harper's Bazaar, could be paper magazine, if they asked me to do a cover or even like a spread in it, I would definitely want to do that. Like, I like the whole I guess creative scene when it comes to photo shoots. I really love to create in photo shoots, whether it be behind the camera or in front of the camera. I love that whole process, just seeing how, like, kind of a blank canvas in a sense, especially when it comes to like studio shoots, just seeing like how that bare room could just like blossom into something so beautiful to create, whether it be like a dope magazine cover, just like a project where different creatives come together. I really love that creative aspect of the industry outside.
Okay, well, before we end this episode, we'd love to know what's next. What are your plans in the next 2, 3, 5 years
in the drop
in your future, in the far, far
tomorrow,
away
tomorrow, you know, in the far away, whatever it may be.
Whatever it is, whatever you want to share.
I would say just keep watching for, because I definitely have a lot of publications that I want to write for, but I would say I definitely want to aim for it. The big, like Harper's Bazaar, Vogue, and
yes,
British Vogue. I think what Edward Enifil is doing with that is like extremely phenomenal. Just giving
that man,
especially Black creatives, a voice when he does their covers, like what I think he did with Rihanna's cover, Beyonce's cover. Absolutely phenomenal. Not just because they're like, you know, popular celebrities, but really taking us like really deep into like their lifestyle. Evolved into since they first came on the scene, since those are two like giants in the industry. But I believe I'm going to be at those publications, and just I have a couple of other creative projects I'm working on, but I don't like to talk too much. I just like to do
That's okay.
But just keep watching out for me. I'm just like trying to, I guess, just I really want my work to make an impact in the industry, change, bring more inclusivity, and that's what I plan to do with my writing and fashion. So,
oh my god, I love this. You're so inspiring. You're so cute. Like this.
I feel like if we met in real life, we would have so much fun.
Anyways,
if we were in New York, or if I was telling her,
when
we're in New York. Or whenever you're in Montreal, we need to link. I was literally telling her about Crew Cafe in Montreal because I'm obsessed with that place. I would take you there. Crew, and I last time we went to this specific restaurant, I shall not name, we had a bad experience, but usually it's a good experience. So I would bring you there.
Yeah, we went for my birthday a couple days ago, and it wasn't
it
wasn't the best on that day, but
it's usually really good.
I can't,
it was that one time.
I can't look to my left right now because
it was just that one time.
Somebody's bitter in the corner. I can't look to my left.
Anyways, where can we find you?
Yeah.
You can find me on Instagram. That's the platform that I'm like mainly on all the time. You can find me at Nay Elizabeth, Elizabeth with 2 H's at the end. So Nay, N-A-Y, Elizabeth with 2 H's at the end on Instagram.
Yay. Obviously, we'll have all of the stuff that you need to watch out for in our description, show notes.
And in the show notes,
My name is Bernie.
And my name is Yasmin.
This was the Fashion Football Podcast, where we talk to fashion creators, fashion industry professionals about the fashion industry. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode.
And you can catch us online as well on all platforms. We go by at the Fashion Football Podcast on Instagram, at FOPA Canada on Instagram, and on TikTok. Sorry, FOPA.ca. Let me correct myself on that one. And you can find us individually at Yasisaya on Instagram.
And I keep Bernie with 2 E's at the end. Yeah.
That's that pretty much wraps it up. So we hope you enjoyed. Oh, wait.
Remember?
Oh, yes. Love always.
And always love.
That concludes today's episode.
We hope you've enjoyed it.
Before you leave, make sure to follow or subscribe wherever you're listening to us.
Leave us a review if you're on Apple Podcasts.
And catch us in an instant at the Fashion Football Podcast on Instagram and individually.
At KimBurning with 2 E's at the end.
And at Yasisaya on Instagram.
Until next time, and remember, love always.
And always love.